Chapter 14, Christianity and Communism, Jewish Twins. To hear the kosher conservatives tell it, a fierce, intensive battle is raging today between the evil forces of communism and the sacred forces of Christianity. We are led to believe that it is an all-out battle between good and evil. We are told that these two forces are the very essence of two poles of opposition in complete and diametrical conflict. It is a sham battle. The fact is, they are both degenerate products of the collective Jewish mind, designed to do one and the same thing, to destroy the white race. If we take a closer look at these two evil forces that have bedeviled and tormented the minds of the white race for all these years, we find that they are not on opposite sides at all. We find that they are both on the side of international Jewry, doing the job they were designed to do. Namely, confuse and confound the white man's intelligence so that he himself will help the Jew in destroying the white race. In comparing the two, we find that they are strikingly similar and not opposites. In fact, there are so many similarities in the two programs and in the philosophy of these two creeds that the hand of the same author can easily be detected. That author is the International Jewish Network. They and they alone wrote both the Creed of Christianity and the Creed of Communism. Both Communism and Christianity preach against materialism. Communism designates those productive and creative forces of our society, to which we owe in such large part the benefits of a productive white civilization, as bourgeois. It then lashes out with unparalleled fury at the bourgeois and tells us over and over again that they must be destroyed. Instead of giving credit where credit is due, it slanders and vilifies these constructive and productive elements, namely the bourgeois or the capitalists, as the ultimate in evil. Christianity tells us basically the same thing. It tells us that it will be more difficult for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get to heaven. It tells us that we should sell all thou hast and give it to the poor, an insidious piece of advice that, if followed, would make us all a pack of roving bums and beggars. It would most surely cause the breakdown of our society. Christianity further tells us, lay not up treasures on earth, but lay up treasures in heaven. Throughout, the implication is clear. Don't accumulate unto yourself any of the good things in life. If through hard work you've already managed to accumulate some wealth, get rid of it. Give it away. Give it to the poor. Above all, give it to the church. They'll take it with relish. The net result of this fantastically bad advice, of course, is that it will more easily pass into the hands of the Jews who do not subscribe to such foolishness. They hope to make fools of us, knowing very well the old saying, "A fool and his money are soon parted," is only too true. The other side of the coin is that the leaders of both Christianity and communism themselves are fantastically materialistic. When we look at the Catholic Church on down through the ages, we find that, whereas they were extracting the last mite from the poor widow, the Church itself was gathering up and hoarding gold, silver, and precious gems in unbelievable quantities. Not only was it taking in and gathering all the gold, silver, and precious stones that it could, but it acquired huge amounts of real estate, and the Catholic Church today is undoubtedly the most fantastically wealthy institution on the face of the earth. Even through the Dark Ages, when poverty was widespread, mostly because of Christianity itself, we find these huge and fabulously rich cathedrals built in the midst of poverty, with gold-encrusted altars and apses and vaults and columns and walls. The leadership of the Church caused to be built huge and great basilicas, cathedrals, abbeys, baptisteries, mausoleums, convents, and churches. Practically all of these were so lavish and so huge in comparison with the meager surroundings of the times that they flamboyantly stood out as the main repository of all the material wealth, gold, silver, and architectural lavishness of both their era and their geographical location. The Church has never bothered to explain why it was so necessary to have such lavish wealth on display to the worshipping faithful, who were told time and again that it was evil to lay up treasures. Unto this day, churches are built to be flamboyant, garish, and bizarre. Money seems to be no object. The Vatican, that citadel of spiritual leadership, which also preaches, "Lay not up treasures on earth," does not practice what it preaches. On the contrary, what it practices is indeed the height of hypocrisy and the antithesis of spirituality. It goes all out for laying up treasures on earth. It has amassed unto itself a portfolio of $5.6 billion in stocks alone, not to mention all of its real estate, art treasures, and other valuables. It enjoys an annual income of $1.5 billion, much of it undoubtedly collected from the widow's last mite, as well as its vast holdings. The United States religious establishment as a whole is valued at $102 billion. In 1969, of the $17.6 billion United States individuals contributed to charity, mostly benefiting the niggers, 45%, or $7.9 billion, was earmarked for religious purposes. Pretty materialistic for a religion that shuns earthly treasures and preaches, "My kingdom is not of this world." Likewise, the communist bosses in Russia, practically all of which are Jews, have accumulated unto themselves all the riches of the countryside, while the communist slave laborer is toiling away 12 hours a day, and then comes home to a dingy, dirty, filthy, crowded little apartment shared with other families. His Jewish bosses have opulent palaces spread all over the countryside. They drive the best cars, chauffeur-driven, of course, and eat the best of foods. Not only that, but they have the best of planes at their disposal to fly wherever they see fit to govern their slave laborers. These Jewish communist bosses usually also have at their disposal imported clothes and tailors and a galaxy of servants. When they need a rest from running their slave empire, they have private villas on the Black Sea or other choice vacation spots at their beck and call. And so it goes in the proletarian workers' paradise. Let us pass on to the next similarity. Both communism and Christianity make extensive use of the weapons of terror, both psychological and real. Undoubtedly, the most ghoulish and vicious concept ever contrived by the depraved and collective mind of Jewry is the concept of hell. Can you think of anything more horrible than placing millions of people in confinement in a superheated torture chamber and then burning them forever and ever without even the mitigating mercy of allowing them to die? With this piece of good news and joyful tidings, Christianity set out to conquer the minds of its superstitious and unreasoning victims. The fact that such a torture chamber was non-existent did not at all detract from the fact that it was a real threat to those who were made to believe that it was real. To a child, for instance, if you tell him that the boogeyman is going to get him, and he innocently believes you, then the threat is just as real as if a boogeyman actually existed. And so it is with hell. To those that have become convinced that it exists, this horrible threat is just as real as if it did exist. However, Christianity did not stop with using psychological terror alone. Those who deviated from the official church line were declared as heretics and forthwith burned at the stake. The idea of using fire in one form or another as a means of torturing their opponents seems to have obsessed these loving Christians' minds. According to Van Brandt's famous Martyr's Mirror, some 33,000 Christians were put to death by other so-called Christians by means of burning at the stake, a grisly type of revenge. Among my ancestors alone, who were of the Mennonite faith, some 2,000 martyrs were burned at the stake by these ever-loving Christians. One outstanding feature about this burning at the stake business was that they were always white people who were being burned. Never have I heard of a nigger being burned at the stake for his heretical beliefs, nor have I ever heard of a Jew being burned at the stake for not believing precisely along specified lines of Judaism. Even though They did not believe in Christ at all. Burning at the stake wasn't the only means of torture and death used by these love-dispensing Christians who were so eager to spread their message of love. During the Inquisition and other times, all the beastly refinements of torture that the depraved human mind could devise were used to extort confessions and whip the unbelievers or heretics into line. The thumbscrew, water dip, the iron corset, drawn and quartered, gouging out one's eyes with hot irons, and the rack slowly tearing limb from body by means of stretching, were but some of the devices used by these ever-loving Christians to spread their gospel of love. When the communists came along and used physical torture as one of their instruments of conquest, they had very little left to invent but what the Christians had already utilized before them. And this is as can be expected, since it was Jewish fiendishness that designed the means of torture for both. Nor did the church hesitate to use wholesale warfare to batter down whole nations that did not submit to their religious dictation. In fact, during the 16th, 17th, and 18th century, the main causes of war were religious dissensions, in which one religious group sought to force their beliefs on their opposites by wholesale warfare and slaughter. The communist record of using wholesale terror, both psychological and physical, is so recent, so widespread, and so well known that we need hardly review it here. In Russia alone, the Jewish communist regime used terror on a scale unknown before in the annals of history. In order to exterminate the best of the white race in Russia, namely the white Russians, the Jews slaughtered some 20 million. The terror, the killing, the murders that are going on in Russia today defy the imagination of the average white man's mind. In any case, both communism and Christianity are using and have used terror extensively, both psychological and physical, to subjugate their victims. Whereas Christians excelled in psychological terror, the communists excel in physical terror, but in both cases, the Jews were experts in using whatever type of terror best accomplished their ends. Both communism and Christianity have a book that presumably lays down the creed of their movement. Christianity has the Jewish Bible, which was written by Jews, mostly about Jews, for the purpose of uniting the Jewish race and for destroying the white race. The Communist Bible is Karl Marx's Das Kapital, and the Communist Manifesto, written by Karl Marx in conjunction with Friedrich Engels, both of whom were Jews. Both of these Jewish creeds, communism and Christianity, are highly destructive, and when followed, tear down the fabric of the society that has fallen victim to them. Christianity teaches the evilness of man, that he is a no good, unworthy sinner, that he is born in sin, and that his every instinct is evil. Communism preaches that the productive, creative element of our society, namely the bourgeois as they call them, is rotten and evil, and must be destroyed. It can be safely said that any sound, healthy society that turned either to complete Christianity and practiced all of its principles, or any society that practiced pure communism, would soon destroy itself. Again, we want to vigorously point out that contrary to what these kosher conservatives are always telling us, communism is by no means the same as socialism or collectivism. The latter are basic constructive elements of any healthy society. But communism is an undisguised Jewish slave labor camp. Since I have gone into this matter in considerable detail in another chapter, we will not take further space to review this idea here. Both communism and Christianity preach the equality of man. Christianity preaches that we are all equal in the eyes of the Lord, whereas the communists preach that we all must become equal in the communist society. The latter argue that the only reason we are not equal is entirely due to environment, and this little quirk of nature they are going to correct. By the time they get through processing us all in an equal environment, they assure us they will have leveled us all down to where we are all equal. This will only be too true, for the white race will be leveled down to where they are all equal to a horde of miserable slaves, whereas every Jew, on the other hand, will be a king. Not only do both communism and Christianity preach the equality of the individual, but they also preach the equality of races, another vicious lie thrown in the face of nature. Both creeds have a very tricky dogma that is rather nebulous and confusing, not to say contradictory in itself. They both, therefore, have set up a hierarchy that interprets what the correct dogma of the day is, and everyone is to toe the line or suffer the consequences of an entrenched power structure. Christianity and communism both have had their schisms. In the case of Christianity, the followers that differed were called heretics. And in the case of communism, those that stray from the official line are called deviationists. In the case of Christianity, the great schism, of course, was during the Reformation, when the Protestant segment developed and broke away from the Catholic Church. It then proceeded to split and splinter in a thousand different directions from there on out, all to the detriment and destruction of the white race. The first great split, of course, was when the Byzantine Empire split from the Roman or Western half. Among the communists, there were a number of schisms, such as the Mensheviks and the Bolsheviks, and a number of other schisms, before the communists ever came to power. After they did come to power, there were the Stalinist communists and the Trotskyite communists, the latter being vigorously pursued and purged from the ranks. Now we, presumably, have the Mao wing of the Communist Party, and for a while we had the Tito, deviationists, and so on. In any case, the main idea in Christianity and communism is the same, on top of a confusing and impossible dogma, sits a tight, powerful hierarchy which dictates and interprets what the line of its followers must be, and terror, death, and reprisal are the consequences to those who dare to think for themselves. It is not at all surprising that the arch enemy of both these Jewish creeds is Adolf Hitler, because he dared to come out with a healthy, natural social structure that embodied those principles that were in harmony with the natural laws and with the healthy instincts for the preservation of the white race. We therefore find the Jewish press, the communist press, and Christianity all in chorus denouncing Adolf Hitler and telling us what a terrible, terrible man he was. All perpetrate and repeat over and over again the same Jewish lies about Hitler that the Jews themselves have dreamed up and supplied to their toadying stooges. The similarities between these creeds go on and on. Both preach the destruction of the present society. They especially zero in on the destruction and downgrading of the more creative and productive elements of society as a whole. Both denounce and vilify the better elements of established society and rejoice at human failures and weaknesses, thereby claiming to prove the correctness of their communist Christian theory. The Jews, who are the perpetrators of communism, envision the United Nations headquarters to finally rest in Israel, and in particular in Jerusalem. Christianity, too, continually keeps talking about Zion, the new Jerusalem, and looks to Jerusalem as the Holy Land, its origin and spiritual headquarters. Both of these Jewish creeds consistently follow policies which are disastrous to the welfare of the white race. I have already gone into considerable detail about the catastrophic effects of Christianity on the great white Roman civilization. I have also pointed out previously that the Jews in communist Russia killed off 20 million of the best white Russians. However, the programs and policies of both these creeds extend much further than these two major catastrophes of history, and to point out how disastrous the effects of both Christianity and communism have been upon the fortunes of the white race would require a whole volume in itself. I believe we have scattered throughout this book a mass of such examples that it is hardly necessary to again repeat them here. Another similarity that manifests itself in both of these Jewish creeds is that both have an incurable ability to put forth a profuseness of verbiage that is extremely vague and beclouded with confusion. Not only is the verbiage profuse, but incredibly lacking in substance. This is an old Jewish trick to confuse and confound the minds of their opposition, the latter being deceived into thinking that all this vast collection of words must have some higher meaning beyond their comprehension. To further destroy and beat back the opposition, both creeds have developed to a high state the art of hurling vicious trigger words and hate words at their opponents. The Christians developed such hate trigger words as atheist, heathen, heretic, apostate, blasphemy, pagan, sinner, and antichrist. The communists have developed a whole stable of similar trigger words, and some of these are fascist, Nazi, racist, bigot, prejudice, and anti-Semitic, without anyone really stopping to analyze what each of these words mean and why they should be considered as bad. These words have been developed to a high state of implied evil, so that by just merely calling these names, you need not really debate the issues, but mercilessly strike down your opponents without resorting to any debate or reasoning whatsoever. If the similarities between Christianity and communism seem rather striking, there is a very good reason for their parallel ideology. The reason is, of course, they were both concocted by the Jewish power structure for the common objective of destroying the white race. Unfortunately, up to this point, both their ideologies have been devastatingly effective. It is partially the purpose of this book and the Church of the Creator to confront this devastating attack on the mind of the white race and expose these twin Jewish ideologies for what they are. Furthermore, I am firmly convinced, and it is my measured conclusion, that the Jews could never have foisted modern communism on a long-suffering humanity had they not first softened up, unhinged, and confused the intellect of the white race with the fallacious snares of Christianity. It is therefore the further objective of creativity to help straighten out the befuddled thinking of the white race to where they then can and will expunge both of these twin Jewish scourges from the face of this planet.